This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. Authorities in France have issued preliminary charges against Telegram messaging app CEO Pavel Durov. AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer reports.
Allegations against Russian-born Durov, who is also a French citizen, include that his platform is being used for child sexual abuse material and drug trafficking, and that Telegram refused to share information with investigators when required by French law. The loudest outrage over Durov's arrest appears to be from Russia, who says it's an infringement upon freedom of speech, even though Russia also sought to block the app for allowing opposition activists to use the platform and try to force them to hand over information from the 2013-2014 uprising in Ukraine that led to the ousting of a pro-Kremlin president. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Opponents of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro took to the streets Wednesday to revive protests disputing the results of the recent presidential election. AP correspondent Haya Panjiwani has more.
The demonstrations in the capital, Caracas, come exactly a month after the fraught July 28th vote, in which Maduro was declared the winner despite strong evidence that opposition candidate Edmundo González won by a nearly 2-1 margin. In weeks of on-again, off-again demonstrations, the opposition's rallying cry has been constant, but so far, ineffective. Opponents are demanding that election officials publish results from each polling station that they say would expose Maduro's attempts to steal the election. I'm Haya Panjwani.
Typhoon Shanshan made landfall in Japan's southwestern Kagoshima Prefecture Thursday. The storm struck the island of Kyushu, carrying wind gusts of 198 kilometers per hour. Japan Meteorological Agency says the typhoon could be one of the strongest to ever hit the region. This is VOA News. Chief Cabinet Secretary Yoshimasa Hayashi told reporters that at least three people were dead because of the typhoon, with one person missing and two others severely injured. More than 250,000 households in seven prefectures are experiencing power outages, while major automakers Toyota and Nissan have suspended operations in some or all of their domestic factories. The UN World Food Program is investigating two of its top officials in Sudan over allegations including fraud and concealing information from donors about its ability to deliver food aid to civilians amid the nation's dire hunger crisis. That's according to several people with knowledge of the probe. That story from correspondent Freddie Joyners of Reuters.
Five of the sources who spoke to Reuters say investigators are looking at whether WFP staff sought to hide the alleged role of Sudan's army in obstructing aid amid a brutal 16-month war with a rival paramilitary for control of the country. When asked about the probe, the WFP said, "Allegations of individual misconduct related to irregularities in pockets of our operation in Sudan are under urgent review by its Inspector General's office." Meanwhile, the U.S. government's aid agency, USAID, the single largest donor to the WFP, said the allegations were deeply concerning and must be thoroughly investigated. Battling severe hunger on many fronts, the World Food Program is currently seeking close to $23 billion in funding to feed millions of people.
That was Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. Prosecutors in France say a 33-year-old man accused in an arson attack on a synagogue last weekend said he wanted to defend the Palestinians and change Israel's policy in Gaza. A police officer was injured after the suspect set multiple fires around the Beth Yaakov Synagogue Saturday in the Mediterranean resort town of La Grande Motte. A new study published Wednesday found that wildfires that swept Canada's woodlands last year released more greenhouse gases than some of the largest emitting countries. Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston said the study is calling into question national emissions budgets that rely on forests to be carbon stores.
Fires scorched about 37 million acres across the country, or about 4% of Canada's forests. That adds up to 647 megatons of carbon, more than 7 of the 10 biggest national emitters in 2022. Canada does not include natural phenomena like wildfires in its annual greenhouse gas emissions inventory, according to a 2021 strategy. Though the fear is the global carbon budget may be based on inaccurate calculations. That budget is the estimated amount of greenhouse gases the world can keep emitting while holding warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels.
I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A life sentence for a former Liberian Chief Justice has been overturned.
Even though we are free, but we are still sad that the government of Liberia refused to look for the killer. They had scientific evidence that we were not the killer, but they refused to look for the killer.
Malawi awards Mozambican leader with a rare honorary doctorate. The use of drones by terror groups makes it difficult for African governments to battle insurgencies. Nigeria gets 10,000 Mpox vaccine donations from USAID. Kenyan teachers vow to continue their strike despite a court order and some government concessions.
The strike continues because our issues have not been addressed by the Teacher Service Commission. They have addressed some few issues, but the issues that are remaining for the intern teachers, they are being promised, but there is no commitment.
And health experts say Africa is on the road to eradicating polio. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Liberia, former Chief Justice Gloria Mususcat has been released from jail, where she has been serving a life sentence for the death of her foster daughter at the justice's home. The Liberian Supreme Court overturned the life sentence on Wednesday because of what it calls insufficient evidence to link Justice Scott and her relatives to the crime. In an exclusive interview with VOA, Justice Mususcat says she will use her experience in jail to fight for prison and judicial reforms, including a code of conduct with penalties for police and prosecutors. She tells me that while she's happy for her freedom, she is also sad that the killer of her niece is still out there.
Even though we are free, but we are still sad that the government of Liberia refused to look for the killer. They were just bent on us. They had scientific evidence that we were not the killer, but they refused to look for the killer. So it's sad. We're happy. We're grateful to God. We glorify him and all of that, that we have our freedom once again. But one of us is not here, and her killer is still out there. So that's the sadness.
Do you think that is something you like to pursue?
It's something that I would ask the government to do, because they have the statutory mandate. The government of Liberia has a responsibility for public safety, protect and defend life and property. And one of his citizens died in 2023, was killed gruesomely. And even though we have new personnel running the country, but it is still a responsibility of the government of Liberia, especially the executive branch, as an institution. So we make that request for them to really investigate this matter.
Justice Scott, there's some who are saying that you got preferential treatment. What's your reaction?
To be put in prison, to have no privacy, what makes it preferential? You in a bathroom, anybody can come there. You bump naked. Even using a commo, anybody can open the door. So where is the preferential treatment? As a lawyer, I was prevented to be a part of my legal team, which is a right under the Constitution to counsel of your choice. So where is the preferential treatment? I might be prejudicial in my answer, but I was tortured that you didn't commit a crime, and they knew. They had all recent scientific evidence to know you didn't commit a crime. And they do this? They didn't even give us chance to moon our beloved Chalo. I really want to see things that have preferential treatment. That person, they have to be a narcissistic person. They have a narcissistic personality. What other cruel treatment they wanted? Especially when the Constitution says that I'm presumed innocent until proven guilty. And all my dignities were removed from me. Then you say I have preferential treatment.
When you say they would not get away with it, Justice Scott, what are you going to go to court to seek redress again?
Chapter 3 of our Constitution, the Constitution of the Republic of Liberia, gave me right. Look, Mr. Bottis, this has to stop. This has to stop. People in authority, and you just violate people's rights, and you just go sit in the corner and suck your thumb, or you just grieve. This has to stop. This evil has to stop.
So it sounds to me that something that is going to come out of your imprisonment is a judicial or prison reform?
Oh, yeah. They got physical infrastructural problems, even administrative problems in the Bureau of Correction, in the Ministry of Justice. The sanitation of the prison, the whole structure, the building leaking everywhere. Can you imagine you living and there's a bug sucking your blood? There's a need for reform. And I'm saying it again. There's a need for a code of conduct for the police, code of conduct with penalties for prosecutors. I keep seeing it. I'm not being arrogant, but people know my name. And if this can happen to me, can you imagine what happened to poor Liberians all over the country, languishing in jail till today for something they didn't do?
Gloria Musu-Scott is the former Chief Justice of Liberia. She was speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Kenyan teachers continued their strike for the third day on Wednesday, despite a court order to suspend the work stoppage. They are demanding the implementation of the second phase of the 2021-2025 collective bargaining agreement and the confirmation of about 46,000 junior secondary staff teachers as permanent and pension-worthy employees. Kenya's Permanent Secretary for Education announced this week that the government will pay all public school teachers their July and August salary increase by Friday this week. Julius Karia is the Deputy President of the Kenya Union of Post-Primary Education Teachers. He tells me the teachers want a commitment on paper.
The strikes peaked on midnight of 26th, and we have finished day three today. The strike continues because our issues have not been addressed by the Teacher Service Commission. They have addressed some few issues, but the issues that are remaining for the intern teachers, they are being promised, but there is no commitment. And that is why we want the commitment from government.
I read that the Cabinet Secretary for Education said yesterday that the government was willing to pay teachers.
Yes.
So are you saying that is not satisfactory?
Yes, this is what the minister is saying is all right, but we have no issue with the minister. The minister have done, he has given that the government is going to put 18.7 billion for the interns, teachers, to be converted to be on permanent and pensionable. He has said about employment of the 20,000 teachers, and then even the first two that remained is going to be paid. But you know, according to us, those are like papers. You know, in a labor movement, it is a tripartite. You need to have the employer, the labor, and the union. We need to sign something, what you call the work return formula, so that it can be formal. What the minister is doing here is good, but we must be given the Teacher Service Commission, the Ministry of Labor, even the Ministry of Education, and the union must sit down and sign something.
President Ruto also said that the government is willing to employ additional teachers.
That is commendable. My brother, the only thing that I can tell you is commitment. The other time they told teachers they are going to be given the second phase. All of a sudden, it was removed. Until when you agitated the other day, they are now giving. We want something that is clear. We want something that is formal. We don't want roadside statements.
What do you say to those who are arguing that continuing the strike is a violation of the court order?
We are not violating the court order. We respect court order. But the court order is faulty. It is saying that the intended strike of 26, this one is not intended. By the way, when this court order was got yesterday, so according to me, it was overtaken by events. And today, our lawyers moved to court to seek interpretation of that court order. We did not want to say that we want to continue with the strike. We want a mediation. But the TSC are very sinister motives. They rushed to the court. Why? Why do you rush to the court and we had finished all the mediation? We're supposed to go to the Ministry of Labor and then agree. We sign work return formula and that is all. So that the students can be taught. As I speak, there is nothing happening in Kenyan schools, secondary schools now.
Are you not hurting the students and their parents by you not going to class?
We are not punishing anybody. We have been doing this thing. The teachers are ready. So long as the government shows willingness and commitment by us signing what's called work return formula. We are ready. Even if they call us at night today or even tomorrow, we'll just declare the strike is off. But we cannot do that. We must follow the procedure.
Julius Korea is the Deputy President of the Kenya Union of Post-Primary Education Teachers. He was speaking with me from Nairobi, Kenya. Malawi has confirmed an honorary Doctor of Philosophy in International Affairs and Diplomacy degree on Mozambican President Filipe Nyusi. Malawi's President Lazaro Chakwera presented the award Wednesday at the University of Malawi in Zomba District. However, critics questioned the criteria used to confer the honor, pointing to ongoing abuse and assault facing Malawians crossing into Mozambique. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Chakwera said the Doctorate of Philosophy in International Affairs and Diplomacy is the highest honor the University of Malawi can bestow upon a head of state.
In giving him this recognition, we acknowledge that the journey towards deeper cooperation, mutual understanding, and collective prosperity that Malawi and Mozambique have enjoyed in the past 4 years is a huge milestone.
In his acceptance speech, Nyusi said the honor reflects Malawi's appreciation of the strong relationships between the two nations. He spoke in Portuguese, which was interpreted in English.
This shows that the special bonds that we've been cementing between Malawi and Mozambique are being watched closely and by the academia. And that's why we have this ceremony today.
Malawi's President Lazarus Chakwera presented the award Wednesday at the University of Malawi in Zomba District. He says it confirms warm relations which Nyusi has championed between the people of Malawi and Mozambique. However, critics question the criteria used to confer the honor, pointing to ongoing abuse and assaults facing Malawians crossing into Mozambique. Some analysts say the Mozambican leader does not deserve such an honor from Malawi. Sherif Kais is a political analyst in Malawi.
He doesn't deserve that because really more than one instances that you hear Mozambique police traumatizing Malawi citizens were passing. Sometimes the police would just ask people to pay money without something else, you know, that you have done. Some lost their lives, some lost their goods. When you're passing Mozambique, it's just like you're entering hell.
A Malawian truck driver who asked not to be named for fear of reprisal said honoring the Mozambican president is an insult to truck drivers.
Maybe on paper, the relationship between Malawi and Mozambique is that good. But to say the truth, on the ground, those of us who travel daily in Mozambican roads, we face a lot of challenges. First, it is with their police, they are corrupt. Two, it is even the reception of the people themselves.
During the ceremony, there was no mention of problems Malawians face when crossing into Mozambique. However, President Chakwera said the honor marks a new chapter in the relationships between Malawi and Mozambique, for which Mozambique President Nyusi has been instrumental. For VOA Africa, I am Lamek Masina in Blantyre.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 29th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In an interview with VOA, United Nations experts say terror groups in Africa are increasing their use of drones to carry out operations previously used only possible to nation states. From Somalia to the Sahel, reporter Henry Wilkinson looks at how this makes the work of African states fighting insurgencies even more difficult.
These drone images, which VOA has been unable to independently verify, purport to show Al-Shabaab's attack on an airport in Kenya in 2021, as well as the use of drones by the armed groups JNIM and ISWAP to coordinate attacks in Mali and Nigeria. According to UN experts, terror groups in Africa linked to Al-Qaeda and Islamic State are making increasing use of consumer drones to carry out operations. In an interview with VOA, Barbara Moraes Figueiredo, who authored a recent report on the trend for the UN's Institute for Disarmament Research, says this gives the terrorist groups improved surveillance and greater power.
airborne capability, so allows them to have, you know, better view of the battlespace and their operating environments. Also provides them with a new way of being able to gather intelligence, and in that way also to plan and coordinate attacks, you know, also sometimes with a higher degree of lethality and precision.
Experts point out that militaries fighting insurgencies and facing terrorist threats from the air for the first time are at a disadvantage. Karen Allen, a senior research advisor at the Institute for Security Studies, has written extensively on the subject of drone use by terror groups.
It conveys a significant psychological advantage to armed groups who in the past may have been at a disadvantage compared to regular armies. So it's leveled the playing field, if you like, between regular forces and irregular forces.
While it's unclear exactly how many incidences of drone use by terror groups there have been in Africa, instances have been recorded in Somalia, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, and Mozambique. Figueiredo says the Central Sahel has borne the brunt of the new trend, however, which has spread from IS and Al-Qaeda in Iraq and Syria to their affiliates in Africa. Allen adds that the use of drones by terror groups is difficult to stop because drones are easy to buy for civilian use on the internet.
I think there is a real difficulty in being able to stop the use of a technology which is a dual-use technology. I mean, think of a mobile phone. Mobile phone can be used most of the time to be able to communicate and have a completely benign purpose, but it can also be used to trigger a tripwire and to cause an ID to explode.
She adds that African nations need to invest in anti-drone systems. This may include tech that jams radio signals, disabling drones, and even anti-drone lasers. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
Nigeria has received its first shipment of mpox vaccines donated by the United States to combat the ongoing outbreak of the disease. This comes amid a sharp rise in cases across Africa, with the Democratic Republic of Congo and East African nations reporting the majority of infections. Gibson Emeka reports from Abuja.
Nigeria has received 10,000 Jynneos vaccine doses from the United Agency for International Development in Abuja. The first batch aimed to strengthen the nation's fight against mpox. Nigeria has already seen more than 40 confirmed and 800 suspected cases in 13 of its states. The delivery followed the World Health Organization's recent declaration of mpox, formerly known as monkeypox, as a global health threat. U.S. Ambassador Richard Mills says Nigeria is well prepared to use the vaccine.
And as I mentioned, Nigeria government has put together a vaccination plan. So there's a plan how to use these vaccines effectively, how to make sure we get the most effect out of this 10,000 vaccine donation. So that's very much why Nigeria was chosen to receive this first batch.
Mpox, a rare zoonotic ailment transmitted from animal to human, has spread across African countries in recent months. As of Monday, the African Center for Disease Control and Prevention reported 22,863 mpox cases, with 3,641 confirmed and 19,222 suspected. More than 620 deaths were reported across 13 AU member states. Nigeria Primary Health Care Director Muyi Aina says the health authority will prioritize states with the most cases for the vaccine rollout.
We are also going to prioritize states that have had the highest number of cases. Many of them are in the south. But of course, we're going to have to work with the states to develop state-specific plans, you know, to make sure that the vaccine is appropriately deployed.
Inoculation should begin soon, although vaccine hesitancy among the public remains a challenge. WHO Nigeria representative Walter Mulambu discussed this issue.
Been used for smallpox, but they've shown some efficacy with the mpox, and we believe we should be informed by our science and not amplify misinformation.
As mpox spread across Central and West Africa, international partners are increasing support. Germany is looking to donate 100,000 vaccine doses to East Africa, where the outbreak has hit Burundi and Kenya hardest. Nigeria aims to secure more vaccine despite shortage and delivery delay. Games in America in Abuja. VOA News.
1 in 200 polio infections leads to irreversible paralysis, according to World Health Organization WHO Africa. Among those paralyzed, about 5 to 10% die once their muscles become immobilized. One regional director, or WHO regional director for Africa, Mashidiso Muti, says cross-border coordination, vaccinating children, and leveraging technology are key to successes against polio. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
There were at least 204 polio variants detected in 21 African countries this year. The World Health Organization African region says since August of 2022, there has been no new type 1 polio cases detected on the continent. Mashidiso Moeti is the regional director for WHO Africa. She says member states should address the ongoing threat of polio in the region.
In May this year, the transmission of wild poliovirus type 1 imported into Malawi and Mozambique was halted. Africa did what it does best. We united, we mobilized and responded with strength and determination using our well-known tools, robust surveillance, quality vaccination campaigns, and increased community engagement, of course, with the strong support of our partners.
Moeti says the fight against polio is faced by threats, among them insecurity, the displacement of people and food insecurity, intensified by demographic pressures and climate change.
The ongoing international spread of polio, most recently to Gaza, is a stark reminder that polio still continues, constitutes a public health emergency of international concern. The road to zero polio in Africa now requires focused action on variant poliovirus outbreaks. This battle continues, particularly in the Lake Chad Basin, the Sahel, and Eastern Africa, where we've seen persistent transmission of the variant poliovirus. Our work to end all forms of polio continues as we navigate a complex landscape of interconnected threats.
Despite the milestones achieved, the Lake Chad Basin countries and Sahel regions are still facing challenges in fighting the virus. The coordinator of the polio eradication program in the African region, Jamal Ahmed, says the main agenda is to get under control the type 2 polio that is predominantly in the region.
We have another virus that is going around. It's heavily centered in DRC and other places. We are variant poliovirus type 1. And if I look at the last 12 months where we have been, the number of cases in the last 6 months are 86% less than they were in the preceding 6 months. We have reduced the number of cases by 79%. We have environmental surveillance. The number of detections have come down by 99%. This is thanks to three countries, primarily Mozambique, Malawi, and Madagascar.
Over 60 million children in Africa were vaccinated against the type 2 polio variant. Ahmed says among the continent's challenges in the fight are vaccine supply and shortages. He says cross-border coordination is key to ensure no child misses out on the vaccine.
Where you see polio in Africa is where we have systems that are not working somehow. When we see an outbreak of polio or many of our other VPD diseases, it means that something has not worked in our routine immunization program, in our broad health systems. So it's really a program about reaching those tough areas, those communities that we don't reach.
It is estimated that at least 168,000 cases of polio occur in Africa each year. Children under the age of 5 are the most affected by polio globally. WHO Africa calls on the global health community to rally and eradicate polio and urges member states to speed up the response to outbreaks. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
And that's it for this Thursday, August 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington saying, have a great day, but please be safe, whatever you do.